This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. On today's show, open enrollment for health insurance is underway, advice for navigating healthcare.gov, and talking with teens about substance abuse. First up, lung cancer is the number one cancer killer in the U.S., with Kentucky ranked first in the nation for lung cancer death, and Ohio and Indiana in the top 15. The good news is that lung cancer is highly treatable with early detection. And with medical advances, even late-stage lung cancer patients are experiencing better outcomes. Here to discuss lung cancer rates, early detection, and treatment are co-directors of the UC Cancer Institute's Lung Cancer Center, Dr. Sandra Starnes and Dr. John Morris. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Dr. Starnes and Dr. Morris, thank you for being here this afternoon.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
And let's start by talking about what are the lung cancer rates nationally?
Nationally, lung cancer is the number one cause of cancer death among Americans. And actually, it is now the number one cause of cancer death in the world by the World Health Organization statistics.
How many people each year are being diagnosed with lung cancer?
About 220,000 diagnosed and just shy of 160,000 deaths.
Yeah, what about locally, Dr. Morris?
I just don't know the Ohio numbers off the top of my head, but it's a significant number.
Mm-hmm. Again, 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. Now, how has the Ohio smoking ban affected those rates?
Well, I think smoking bans in general, the Ohio smoking ban, have lowered the frequency of smoking. Just historically, at the time of the U.S. Surgeon General's report in 1964, about 45% of the U.S. population smoked. Presently, that number nationally is just under 17%. In Ohio, Kentucky, it's somewhat higher. Kentucky, I believe, is 22%, so still significantly higher than the national average, but on its way down, which is a good finding.
Now, how has this affected the cancer rates?
They drop, but there's approximately 20-year lag between beginning smoking and the risk of lung cancer going up. Similarly, when people stop smoking, it's about a 20-year lag before the rates start to decrease.
Now, what are some of the symptoms of lung cancer? How does somebody know if they have lung cancer?
So unfortunately, most patients have no symptoms until it's already at a more advanced stage, but some potential symptoms would be shortness of breath that's different or worse than it had been in the past. Many patients are smokers, so they may already be short of breath because they have emphysema, but if the shortness of breath is worsening, coughing up blood, being excessively tired, sometimes chest pain can be a sign of lung cancer, but most of the time if you have a symptom, it's already at a more advanced stage, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. And some of these symptoms can be other things as well.
They can be a lot of other things. They're very, they're not really specific to lung cancer.
And that's what makes catching lung cancer and treating it more difficult.
It's very difficult.
Yeah. So why, talk about the impact that early lung cancer screening has. Why is it so important?
Well, it's very exciting, actually. Lung cancer, as Dr. Morris said, is the number one cancer killer in the United States. And up until recently, we have had no effective screening. They did chest x-ray studies back in the 1980s, and that did not show any benefit in lung cancer screening. Just recently, about 5 or 6 years ago, a big national trial came out that basically randomized people to either get CAT scans, a lower dose CT scan, versus chest x-rays, which we know now is not beneficial. So half the people got chest x-rays, half the people got CAT scans. And what they found, which was, like I said, just published not too long ago, is that if you got a CAT scan, the lung cancer mortality went down by 20%. And these are in higher risk patients. So these are patients who have had a history of heavy smoking or were current smokers. But it's the first time ever that a screening test has been shown to decrease the lung cancer death rate. So it's been pretty exciting.
Who's eligible for that type of screening?
So what the study showed and what a lot of national guidelines have shown is screening for patients who are 55 to 80 and have had a heavy smoking history. So that means a 30-pack year smoking history. So how do you detect that, or how do you calculate that? It's the amount of packs you smoke per day times the years you smoke. So 30-pack years is about one pack per day for 30 years, two packs per day for 15 years. So it's relatively heavy smoking. Now, insurance covers most patients without a copay or deductible. They do stop covering if you've quit for 15 years, but since there's still a risk, our lung cancer screening program will still continue to screen patients even if they've quit 20 years ago.
Dr. Morris, what about non-smokers? I mean, do they run a risk as well? Can they get lung cancer?
Yes, you can certainly see lung cancer in non-smokers. There are other risk factors other than cigarette smoking. There are some industrial exposures, things like asbestos. Those are now tightly controlled by occupational safety programs. The other risk factor in the United States is the risk of radon gas exposure, particularly in the north and the northeast. A lot of the rock formations are very ancient granite, and they have natural uranium in them, and that decays into radon gas, which can seep into a house, particularly the basement. And in the areas of the country where it's colder, the houses are very airtight, and you can get high levels of radon gas, which has been associated with increased risk of developing lung cancer in non-smokers, particularly in the basements.
What about secondhand smoke? How big of a risk factor is that?
It's a risk factor. It's not a huge risk factor. It's been estimated that secondhand smoke exposure increases your risk of lung cancer by about 25% over that of a non-smoker. Let me put that in a proper perspective. So if your risk of lung cancer as a non-smoker is 1, that means the risk of secondhand smoke exposure is about 1.25. If you are a smoker, smoking a pack to 2 packs a day, your risk of lung cancer is 15 to 30 times that of a non-smoker.
What if you quit smoking? How much of an impact does that have?
It depends on how much you smoked and for how long. It takes approximately 20 years for the risk to go back down. And there's some controversy, but the risk plateaus. At worst, your risk plateaus and doesn't keep going up in heavy smokers, and actually comes down to a certain level, but may not come down to that of a non-smoker over time.
Besides the factors that we've been talking about, what about family history? Does that play a big role in whether you have more of a chance of developing cancer or not?
Yeah, there are certain families that we see 3 to 4 first-degree relatives, and there's actually been abnormalities in genes that have predisposed to lung cancer. It's not very common, but if you have multiple family members with a history of lung cancer, that's certainly something to discuss with your physician.
And what about gender and race? Do they play a role in cancer development?
In terms of gender, it's quite complex. So in men, approximately 90 to 95% of lung cancer is associated with tobacco use. In the United States, in women, about 80% of women are with lung cancer are smokers. So there's 20% that are not. If you go to other countries like China, 50% of the women with lung cancer are non-smokers. There may be other environmental risk factors. There may be some hormonal interplay. And among people who are non-smokers that develop lung cancer, a significant fraction of them have what are called driver mutations. These are genetic changes in the tumor that are acquired. They're not generally passed down through generation from generation, but these are mutations that occur in the tumor that drive the proliferation of the cancer cells. And they were a special group because we have special drugs that we treat these patients with now.
I'm talking with the co-directors of the UC Cancer Institute's Lung Cancer Center, Dr. Sandra Starnes and Dr. John Morris. If you have any questions or comments and you'd like to join us, 513-419-7100 is the number to call. You can also email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. In terms of cancer survivorship today, how does that compare with say 20 years ago? Is it getting a lot better?
We are making progress. Lung cancer still, and we're just starting to see the impact of screening. About 50 to 60% of patients are diagnosed at a late stage, so stage 4, where the cure rates have historically been pretty low. When you look at all lung cancer patients, 3 decades ago, the survivor for all lung cancer patients was about 15%. Now it's about 18% at the latest numbers. But when you look at specific groups, and Dr. Morris can talk a little bit more about advanced stage, there has been some improvement in patients with advanced stage. So, I think the way to impact lung cancer is, number one, to not smoke and quit smoking, decrease
like the
smoking
rate. Right?
That's one of the
do.
Biggest things. Two is early detection with screening. And then we are also making some progress with newer drugs that have improved the chances of cure and even advanced stage, which we didn't think was possible even probably 10, 15 years ago.
Very interesting. There was a report at the American Society of Cancer Research meetings last April. There was a whole class of drugs called immuno-oncology drugs, and I'm sure a lot of your audience has seen them advertised on television. There are several of them that have come out in the market in the last year or two. And those drugs, when they were experimental, they were being given to patients. So we now have some five-year follow-up on those patients. They were given to patients who had no other treatment available to them, who had failed the standard chemotherapy, radiotherapy, surgical treatments. And it was, and this was not a controlled study, but the fascinating thing was that we would have expected the five-year survival in that group to be less than 4%. It's reported now to be between 16 and 20%, quadrupled with this class of drugs. And we're learning how to better use these drugs, how to use them in combination. So I expect things to continue to improve over the next several years, next decade.
Yeah. So medication, and you mentioned some other ways of treating cancer. What's pretty much standard for cancer treatment?
Depends on the stage. So early stage disease, surgery is the best curative treatment. When the disease is more advanced, you will use surgery, often combined with chemotherapy. If a patient is not a surgical candidate, in other words, it's too locally advanced or is spread, the treatment will be chemotherapy combined with radiation or chemotherapy alone or the immunotherapy with chemotherapy. There's various combinations. We've gotten very nuanced in our treatment now. We can actually do precision medicine and actually pick drugs that will work in a particular patient's tumor. Not every drug is good for every patient.
So you're able to precisely figure out what this particular drug is going to have this effect on this particular type of tumor?
Yes. And I can predict with certain drugs, based on certain genetic or molecular tests we do on the tumor, which drugs will work, and if they stop working, what to do in the next go-around.
513-419-7100. Let's talk to Jane. Hi, Jane.
Hi. I just had a quick question for the doctors. I'm 75, and I lived 4 years with my father, who smoked 3 packs a day, and he passed away in 1965. My father and my brother both have died of lung cancer, I believe lifestyle choices. I used to have chest x-rays every 4 or 5 years just because of all the airplane bars, restaurants, things that we were part of smoking, even though I did not smoke. Is it a CAT scan a recommended thing for someone my age, or should I just avoid it?
Well, have you smoked?
Not since I was 21.
So for you, for you, we wouldn't recommend screening. Generally, we recommend screening for people who have had a heavy smoking history. Now, like we were talking about earlier, there are some patients who get lung cancer who haven't smoked, but we haven't figured out what other patients would be best to screen. There are a lot of downsides to screening, so we detect a lot of abnormalities that end up being nothing, and patients can go under, you know, unnecessary procedures. So there is a lot of downsides. We have to be careful about not screening somebody who we would consider at lower risk. So with your history, we would consider you at pretty low risk for lung cancer, and we wouldn't recommend screening at this point.
Not even for peace of mind reasons, then, it sounds like, from what you're saying.
Yeah, it's easy to say that we could all just get a full body CAT scan for peace of mind, but there are a lot of downsides, and there are potentially some invasive procedures that could end up being done for something that ends up not being cancer, and just the radiation exposure from doing screening, you know, as well. So we have to be careful about the risks of screening and make sure that we're really targeting people who are going to have the best benefit.
So we've had these advances. Screening is becoming more common. What are some of the other advancements in testing and diagnosis?
Well, in generally with lung cancer, you know, the screening is done with a lower dose CT scan. So the dose that we're able to do and the exposure to radiation is much lower. having some of our advanced capabilities like PET scans. So generally, most patients with a lung cancer get a PET scan, which is similar to a CAT scan, except they inject a sugar material in that has a tag. So it uptakes in anything in the body that uses a lot of sugar, like cancer. So it's really able to detect small areas of cancer that we wouldn't have otherwise detected on our CAT scans. And then we have a lot of new diagnostic techniques. We can do, you know, biopsies of lymph nodes and nodules or spots in the lungs with almost like a GPS type of biopsy, where we actually put the coordinates in and we can get out to places we could never get out to before. So there's a lot of advances in just the workup of somebody with a lung cancer or a lung spot that we didn't even have 5, 10 years ago.
Oh, it sounds like the precision is the key word here, based on what both of you are telling me. That's where things are headed with lung cancer treatment?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, we now test lung cancers for certain genetic mutations. And based on those mutations, as I said, I can select drugs that will work in patient A or patient B. Patient that has a certain mutation called an epidermal growth factor mutation, they can take a pill a day to treat that. If they don't have that, they'll do better with chemotherapy. So I can select the treatment the patient does better with. We now have something called a liquid biopsy, which is actually FDA approved. It's not for every patient, where rather than doing a biopsy to get the genetic mutation, we can sometimes draw it from the blood and pick it up in the blood and save the person an invasive procedure.
513-419-7100. Tom joins us now. Hi, Tom.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. And go right ahead.
I'm a 56-year-old who's been smoking since he's been 8 years old. Seven kids, my whole family smoked. And my mother had emphysema. I lost a 63-year-old brother 2 years ago from the same thing. And my lungs seem to be okay, but I still smoke a pack a day. And it's been 48 years. And I was an athlete, a gymnast, until I was 33. But I'm beginning to feel the effects. And I was just wondering, the 1-800 quit line seemed to make me smoke more. It caused a lot of anxiety. And where would I go to have my lungs checked? And is there any smoking cessation places in Cincinnati that I might be able to check out?
Yeah, so to start with, it sounds like you would be a candidate for lung cancer screening, which basically is just a low-dose CT scan, which takes a couple of minutes. So it's something to, you know, talk to your family doctor about. We have a very strong program at UC where we screen patients, and it's very personalized. But as you said, the most important thing is to quit smoking, and it is very hard. There's a lot of good programs around nowadays because it is hard to quit on your own. So certainly, you know, talking to your family doctor to help you, but there's also some formalized programs. Dr. Morris runs one of the programs at UC called Win by Quitting, and I'll let him speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, so there's lots of options now for people who want to quit. Some of the things we know that nicotine, which is the major addictive component of tobacco, is one of the most addictive substances known. And the thing about cigarettes is that it's the fastest way to get nicotine to the brain. It's faster than if you injected it intravenously. So one of the things that's very important is that if a patient wants to quit, there's the motivation, but they also have a program where they get both counseling and drug therapy. Nicotine patches, many patients who go on the nicotine patch, it's not one size fits all. If somebody's smoking two packs a day, they need to be on 2 21-milligram patches, and many family practitioners will just start them on a 21-milligram patch. Each cigarette has a nicotine dose of 1 milligram. So you really need to replace, when you start the replacement, milligram per milligram. There are other drugs available that can be used either singly or in place of or in combination with nicotine patches. And there was just a study. Actually, I was taking a training course in nicotine addiction last November. And there was a study that looked at how many times somebody has to quit before they actually quit. And it was shocking. I had never realized it's between 30 and 40 attempts over a lifetime.
So you have to be pretty determined. You just have to keep trying.
Determined is don't feel broken if you fail. You know, get up the next morning, dust yourself off, and try again. 30 to 40 attempts is absolutely an amazing number.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's talk to Zelda now. Hi, Zelda. Hi, Zelda. Are you there?
Hello.
Hi. Go right ahead.
I just wanted to comment. I was one of those people. I was a 45-year smoker. And several years ago on your show, on Cincinnati Edition, I had heard about the program for cessation of smoking at the Barrett Cancer Center. And I always kept that in my pocket. Last spring, I thought I got scared, and I said, this is enough. So I went, and the lady, the PharmD lady, helped me so much. I had stopped smoking in April when I started, and I haven't had a cigarette since.
Congratulations.
I hadn't been successful. She said, well, just take our time. So, you know, it took like 3 months, and I just slowly went down on the patch. And in fact, Carissa just called me like a month ago to see how I was doing, if that's not so sweet. So I feel so fortunate, and I wanted to just let you guys know that. Thank you.
Thank you, Zelda. We really appreciate the call.
Just telling us that story is thanks enough.
Yes. Yeah. It sounds like you're better off not trying to stop on your own, not trying to go this alone.
The success rate, if you do it yourself, is between 3% and 6%. There are some people that can do it, but they're probably unique people. What's been found is a combination of drug therapy along with counseling works the best.
Again, 513-419-7100. If you would like to join us, you know, are we to the point where we're comfortable using the word cure when it comes to lung cancer yet, or is that still a ways off?
No, I think we can use a cure. Certainly early stage patients, surgery, you know, even as a single modality is curative. For patients with a little more advanced surgery and what's called adjuvant chemotherapy can be curative. And even in advanced stages, we hesitate to use the word cure, but as I told you, we're now seeing 5-year survivors, which I couldn't have told you 2 years ago.
Yeah, so we're getting better at dealing with this, it sounds like, Dr. Starnes. It sounds like we've made a lot of progress.
We have made a lot of progress, and we can really say that in the past decade, whereas despite several decades of research before this, we weren't really making a lot of progress. So the past decade has really seen a lot of changes in lung cancer, which is exciting.
Yeah. What does the future hold? What were we expecting in terms of treatments and diagnosis looking out?
Well, a couple of things. Let's talk a little bit about research. You know, compared to the top five causes of cancer death in the United States, lung cancer is severely underfunded in NIH research dollars. The number of research, and this is statistics from the Washington Post, published in 2014, that the research funds per lung cancer death is about $1,700 per death. For breast cancer, it's $16,000 per death. And certainly we need more research in all phases of lung cancer. It's biology, it's cause, it's treatment, it's screening. So I think that's important to do the research. In terms of treatment, I think the things coming up are going to be combined immunotherapy, chemotherapy, which has been showing the best results in early studies, or combine different immunotherapies together, getting the body to fight the cancer for you rather than giving drugs.
Let's talk to Bill. Hi, Bill.
Hi. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. And go right ahead.
I just wanted to tell everybody, I quit smoking in 1990 after about 30 years of smoking. I went through a program called the 5-Day Plan that was developed by the Seventh-day Adventists, mainly out of Kettering Memorial Hospital up in Kettering. But the whole concept was no drug assistance, no nothing, just stop smoking. There's a lot of rules to the program, but at the end of 5 days, I never smoked again.
That's great.
Well, yeah. Congratulations. Great, great, great for you. Yeah. Let's talk to Helen. See. Hi, Helen.
Hi.
Go right ahead, Helen. You're on.
My question is, I am an ex-smoker, and I quit with a patch. It was very successful on the first try. I used to smoke 3 packs a day, and I started when I was young because both my parents were smokers. And so I quit when I was maybe 25, 26, 27, around that age. And since then, I have, you know, I work out every day. I'm, you know, I eat very well. And obviously, you know, my family, my husband, they, you know, they don't smoke. So I'm wondering if those, you know, doing all that will decrease my chance of getting lung cancer, because obviously that's something on my mind. And I also have a question, because being a radiographer, I understand the risk involved in radiation. And I know CT scans, you know, involve, you know, a huge amount of radiation. So how does that play into all of this?
Those are good questions. So, and that's why we have to be very careful about who we recommend screening to and really make sure we're targeting people who we feel are at the highest risk, because CT scans do involve radiation. Now, the amount of radiation compared to CT scans that we did 10 years ago has gotten a lot lower. And for screening, we do what's called a low-dose radiation. So it's about 10 chest x-rays, where a regular, and it's about a fourth of what a regular CT scan radiation dose would be. It's similar to just walking around planet Earth for about half a year, the baseline radiation exposure that you get just from living on Earth. But, you know, over 20, 30 years of getting scans, that certainly could potentially increase your risk of cancer. In women, we worry about breast cancer with CT scans. So recommending screening to people who have a long smoking history, who have smoked a lot, who are older, so we can really minimize the risk of radiation. In general, we feel that it's safe and the risk of developing cancer from these CT scans is low, but it's certainly not zero. So we have to be careful to not screen patients who really have a low risk of lung cancer so we don't do any harm.
And preventative steps. Yeah. I mean, she's exercising. I mean, do things like that have an impact?
Yes. Wellness plays a very important role. You know, diet, a healthy lifestyle, exercise, having good lung function. And just to come back at this a slightly different way from Dr. Starnes, as you know, it's recommended that American women undergo mammography when they reach age 40. And, there, you know, it's been calculated the risk of a mammogram causing breast cancer is 1 in 1 million mammograms. But an American woman's risk of developing breast cancer is 1 in 9. So everything is relative risk.
Thank you for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you.
Much appreciated.
Our pleasure.
Co-directors of the UC Cancer Institute's Lung Cancer Center, Dr. Sandra Starnes and Dr. John Morris. Coming up, the deadline to apply for health insurance is fast approaching. If you've got any questions about navigating healthcare.gov, give us a call, 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.